Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle.
And I am Cisco, otherwise known as Josh.
Hi, Cisco from the forums.
Yeah. Otherwise known as Josh from real life.
Just to clear that up, great.
Well, I do have a cat named Cisco.
And I'm sure he's podcasting with us.
Just wanted to make it absolutely clear. So I watched Salmon Kano over the weekend.
Oh, nice. How was it?
It was not bad. It's not bad. It was, I would say, budget-wise, I would compare it to one of those video game movies, not Biohazard or Resident Evil, but like Blood Rain. Probably a better budget.
Is that really a good comparison? Because personally, I didn't care for Blood Rain.
Can I finish?
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
So I was like budget-wise, but I think like they made some good acting choices, and yeah, I thought the story's enjoyable. It's pretty action-oriented. It stars James Purefoy from Rome, and he's in John Carter, and he's really good. Yeah. Those not familiar with the story of Solomon Kane, it's a Robert E. Howard character, so not as famous as Conan. It's an origin story, so they kind of explain that, and it's low fantasy. So
it's the origin story of a Puritan? So it's like when he finds his first Bible, or what?
I'm not going to ruin the movie.
So okay. Cool.
Watch it. I will say this, the beginning it starts, and you're like, whoa, I don't remember this Solomon Kane. So, but it's good. It's, you know, it starts off with a bang, and kind of just never lets up.
Hmm. Yeah, one of my buddies at work is a big fan of it. He watched it a month or so ago. He liked it too.
Really? I can't see it developing a fan club.
He's not really well known for liking good movies.
Okay, just not selling. Anyway, yeah, it's definitely worth watching. Could you get any gaming ideas out of it? Sure.
How to set up combat?
Yeah, no, it'd be how to, like, just kind of, you probably get good ideas on how to go, you know, from combat to combat with, like, you know, a thin story in between.
So we're talking about the same amount of story as Spartacus.
Less.
Wow.
Oh, wow. So we're like at 300 level then, huh?
Less.
Survival mode on a video game?
No. I guess like, yeah, like 300.
Okay.
And when you watch it, you won't believe how many, like, fat bald guys are around the world. They just seem to, like, cast them all in this movie.
Are you sure it wasn't the same one again and again?
I did look, and I'm like, no, it's a different guys.
This guy's fatter and balder.
So over the weekend, I saw Hunger Games, finally, because it's going to disappear from Japanese theaters next week, even though probably already out on DVD back in the States.
It is.
Yeah, that's what I figured. Japan's always late. I had also finished up the book right before going to see the movie, and I don't know, maybe I've kind of chilled out a bit from the Game of Thrones TV series, because I was much more forgiving of changes in the movie for Hunger Games.
I don't imagine you were as big a fan of Hunger Games as you were of the Game of Thrones series, so I...
No.
Game
of Thrones is much, much better, but I'll say this, I thought the Hunger Games was a good book.
Oh, wow. That's high praise from you.
I think you could pull out a lot of elements for a game. There's a lot going on in there. You know, Battle Royale, one person is going to survive out of these 24 people chucked into an arena, but there's all kinds of alliances going on, and there's stuff going on prior to the people getting chucked in. So, yeah, I thought it was pretty cool.
Sounds pretty nifty, yeah.
A friend of mine at work has read the books, and he raved about them. Personally, I kind of consider the plot to be sort of a Stephen King's The Running Man, but for the Harry Potter crowd.
Hmm. That's kind of the impression that I got, yeah.
But I definitely think there's a lot of potential for adapting that to a role-playing game.
Hmm. Running Man, again?
But Running Man and Hunger Games.
All right.
Yeah, I wasn't sure either, yeah.
Sorry, I should have been more clear there.
I think there should be more running in all games, really.
Yeah, more men.
And hunger.
And more hunger.
And more games! Yeah, jeez. Oh, man.
Ooh,
well played.
Oh, I finally, I have a classmate who works at Lego, and I finally got a Lego set from him, and it was actually really, really nice. It was one of those prequel shuttles that the Jedi go on in.
Oh, cool.
The Star Wars shuttle. And we're at this, like, barbecue, and there was, like, this kid, and he had, like, it was a single mom situation, so it was just like, oh, okay, I'll play with your boy, because, you know, doesn't have a father, right? And I said, oh, why don't we build this Lego? And it took so long to do that we only got about halfway through, and then it was like, oh, it's time for you to leave, and I'm like,
sorry, kid, I'm taking this home.
Yeah, so I was kind of like, yeah, well, see you, kid. I'm like, all right, well, hey, take it. That's yours, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, and then she's like, oh, that's really good. And I'm like, well, you know, I'm a grown man. You know, I don't need a toy. And of course, I'm thinking, I'm just dying to have that in my house.
Yeah.
this actually reminds me. So there's a lot of kids at this barbecue over the weekend. There's a son and daughter of one of my classmates, and they're really, 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 really nice. I'm like, well, you guys can help me chop up the fruit that I bought. I bought a bunch of, like, Japanese pears and stuff. And, yeah, I just let the girl who was like, I don't know, 7 or 8, gave her the knife and then left her alone. Like, you can't give a kid a knife. And she did a fantastic job.
Is this our segue into the splatter horror films?
I thought this was the reason that Lyle has cats.
She's going to respect that when she's older. You know, she'll have a lot of stories to tell why she has 8 fingers. But it was the trust. Don't worry, by an adult.
It's the trust that gets her through, that only having 8 fingers, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I grew up pretty fast that day. So I think the trust was warranted a little 5 minutes late, or 5 minutes early. But so, yes, so we are talking about horror. So this is the final installment in the month of horror, even though it's now in November. And this is an episode that we've wanted to do for a while, but we just tried to figure out how to do it. We invited Josh along because he's probably the biggest fan of horror movies that I know.
I'm not going to contest that. I've probably seen more horror movies than the 3 of you combined.
I don't know. So why do you like horror movies, Josh?
There's a lot of reasons, actually.
No one's ever asked me that question. They just kind of leave the room.
Actually, yes. Well, as we're about to get into, there are a lot of sub-genres and sub-sub-genres and sub-sub-sub-genres ad nauseum of horror movies. There's the adrenaline rush from actual scare, or just the enjoyment of a good story.
Yeah, because when I watch The Dead That Eat, number 7, it's all about the story.
Hey, I'm not sold on sequels. But in any case, I just see a lot of potential for role-playing games, which is another interest of mine, of course.
We sound like mega nerds, sorry. Like, we keep going. Every time we mention something, it's like, oh, how do I relate that to a game?
Lyle, this is a gaming podcast. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, right. Sorry.
here you thought you were just podcasting about your life with Lego.
Tell us more about what did you eat at this barbecue? And relate it to games.
What other sharp objects did you give young children?
But anyway, I guess that's why I like them. Plus, I've always had an interest in folklore and mythology, and I guess, in a way, these are the modern myth or the modern take on classic myths.
How about you guys? Wayne, Chris, you guys big fans of horror movies?
Yeah. It's not my favorite genre. It's not the first section I go to when I go to rent something, but yeah, I definitely enjoy them. I like the emotion, the thrill, the jolt, that kind of stuff.
I think I tend more towards suspense movies or maybe one of the subgenres of, like, you know, more psychological horror. I don't know. I've recently started watching more horror stuff, but up until, yeah, recently, I just figured it was just buckets of blood and no story and, you know, movies like Hostel or Saw, I'm kind of like, well, I don't really want to see those. Yeah, but like...
Oh, those aren't horror. Those are torture porn.
Yeah, exactly. And whether I'm wrong or not, that was kind of my impression of most horror movies, which is why I kind of stayed away from them. But which is odd, because I'm always interested in running horror games, yet not really interested in the films.
I think that is kind of the stigma that slasher or splatter movies have, is that it's all about blood and guts and boobs and naked women running through the forest.
Covered in blood.
Covered in blood, yes. and not much else.
And boobs. Covered in boobs.
Oh, God, that's a disturbing image.
But if you look at some of the earlier ones, they were actually genuinely chilling, ignoring the multitude of sequels, Halloween, Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street. If you look at the originals and you suspend the corniness of all their sequels, they actually are kind of frightening.
Yeah, this is going to sound, I don't know, maybe cheesy, but I kind of liken horror movies now to modern art. Like, I find I appreciate modern art a lot more when I understand what the artist was trying to do. And so I appreciate horror movies when I understand what fear the creators were trying to draw on. You know, what was going on in the world at the time, and what were they saying? Like, the original movie, The Fly, is fear of kind of, you know, single parentage and the absentee dad. Godzilla was fear of, you know, nuclear disaster. And then, you know, the remake of The Fly was kind of like fear of AIDS, essentially, and this thing inside you. Once I know that, and I know what the point of the movie was, I find I appreciate it more and can watch it.
No, I agree.
Oh, sorry, I was actually going to say, your point just before, Josh, was is actually really interesting, because I saw Halloween very late on. I never saw it until after I'd seen a lot of other horror movies, and actually I was rather disappointed by it. And I think it was because I'd already seen so many other movies in that same genre that I'd seen all of the tropes before, so nothing surprised me. I'm kind of disappointed because it took away from what would otherwise be a really great movie, I reckon.
I think that's the problem with these movies. Like, if you think of these iconic scenes like Hannibal Lecter's or the head swiveling in The Exorcist, you've seen it so many times in parodies and things mm-hmm. that when you actually see it in the movie, it's like, oh, that.
Yeah, exactly.
And Lyle?
I like horror movies too, thanks for asking. I like some. I don't like others. I probably don't need to see a lot of, like, serial killer movies. I like zombie movies. Vampire movies.
Werewolf movies.
But
they're not Dean Stockwell.
Not especially.
Jacob, well.
What's that? I haven't seen Twilight.
Jacob.
I haven't seen Twilight.
Thank you.
So he says.
So, yeah, I think I go for certain genres, but I when I was a kid, I really liked the Halloween series and a show or a movie called The Burning, but I never actually watched Friday the 13th until, like, last year. I saw Jason Takes Manhattan once at a double feature in high school.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
No wonder you have a distaste of that's one you started with.
To be honest, when I watched Friday the 13th, it wasn't like it was... Yeah, it's kind of like it's been done. So I like the reimagining and Scream.
The kind of meta thing where they know all the tropes
yeah.
of the horror genre, but it's still kind of like a horror movie.
Or things, other things that Romero's done, like Martin, which is like a reimagining of the vampire mythos. Mm-hmm. So.
Oh, that was a very good movie.
Yeah. Like the Crazies.
The original Crazies. I didn't much care for the remake.
I liked the remake. I thought they're both really good, and you could watch both of them and get something out of it.
I just found the remake to be more your basic zombie movie, and it wasn't so much that they were crazy, it was just they were...
Crazy?
Well, they were basically, for all intents and purposes, they were zombies.
It should have been called the Loonies. Well, what we're going to do today is what we've decided to do, I think it was because we couldn't decide which one to go with, so we went with subgenres and fears.
Way to just shatter the illusion that we have our act together.
Anyone who's listened to this podcast knows that's not the case.
Okay, fair enough.
So what we're going to do is we'll go through six kind of subgenres of horror. They're fairly broad. And talk about that. And then we're going to be seeing which one of these five fears we can derive from these subgenres. And, of course, how to apply them to your game. So the five fears are going to be fear of disease, fear of technology, fear of nature, fear of madness, and fear of the other. All right?
All right.
Alright.
So the first one, since we were talking about serial killers, let's start off with serial killer as a subgenre. Of course, things like Friday the 13th and Halloween.
Oh, well, I just want to clarify that they're more of a cinematic exploitation or elaboration, I guess I could say, of the serial killer. Your typical serial killer has like a modus operandi.
He's not immortal.
Yes.
bullets probably can stop him. Probably does not run around in a hockey mask and a chainsaw. And they target like a specific group, usually, not always, but usually people that they're sexually attracted to, with the psycho killer of these movies. It's more, you know, it's all about the body count and elaborate deaths.
That said, I was rather attracted to most of Jason's victims.
I think he was too. Isn't that kind of the thing? Isn't that that big sexual subtext?
Oh, that's right, yeah, hey.
No. It's a sexual subtext, yeah, but, you know, Jason, the character, is not attracted to them. He kills them because they represent the people that tormented him as a boy. For those not familiar, the premise is that he comes back from the dead to terrorize people similar to the ones that caused him to drown.
Yeah, but wasn't that because they were ignoring him?
No, the counselors were ignoring him. The other children were tormenting him and causing him to run to the lake and drown. So he kills both the people that are similar to the ones that tormented him and the counselors who are busy getting high, getting drunk, having sex.
Yeah, but I said...
Get over it.
yeah, the difference, though, Lyle, is you said one group, and Josh is saying, no, it's both of them. Or not.
Yeah. No, that is true. I was saying it's both of them. He also sort of represents sort of an extreme cautionary tale.
Don't drown kids.
Well, in addition to that, it's, everybody knows the horror movie tropes of like, oh, well, don't have sex, don't get high, don't drink. And he's sort of a very extreme moral enforcer in this, in a way.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of fears could you, so if you're doing a serial killer movie as a game master, what kind of fears do you want your players to feel or their characters to feel? What can you play with there?
Madness, especially.
I was thinking that one, but I don't care. How would you do that one?
Well, I think the fear of madness does cut both ways. One is, of course, that you go mad, but the other is like you're afraid of crazy people. I mean, you ever been on a crowded train or just like car people driving in cars and you're walking across the street? There's a lot of trust there, like societal trust, in that person is not going to go crazy and run you down, mm-hmm. or that person didn't bring a knife onto the train and is going to just start stabbing people.
Yeah, that's a really good point, though. Like, I mean, if you think about when you're on the train, if there is somebody who's kind of like rocking back and forth and talking to themselves, then you tend to move away from that person. But also, the idea is if the psycho killer is insane, then it's hard to judge what they're going to do next. They don't follow a logical pattern necessarily. So it kind of bleeds into the fear of the unknown as well, because you don't know what's coming next and it's hard to guess. But yeah, absolutely, I can see that being a good thing to go on.
I suppose it also represents the fear of the other, because in some movies it's not so much the obvious hulking brute with a hockey mask or something.
So that might be a hint.
that is definitely a hint. But if you look at movies like American Psycho, where Christian Bale is just your typical 80s yuppie banker by day, but by night he is chopping up hookers, smashing people's heads in.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that movie. That's awesome.
Yeah, would you say that's a horror movie, though?
It's a spin on the horror movie.
It's horrific.
Yeah.
It has Psycho in the title.
Think about Huey Lewis in the news. Oh, I love that movie. I gotta watch that again.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that's a horror movie.
This may be kind of stretching it, but couldn't you also argue that sometimes a serial killer could be fear of nature? Where, as you said before, like, sometimes they are insane and they can't be predicted, and that's kind of one of the fears. But sometimes they almost don't even represent a person. They're just kind of more like a force of nature that you can't really stop or reason with.
I suppose you could look at that way. Sort of an extension of nature is the fear of sex. And going back to what I said about sometimes they're sexually attracted to the people that they kill, or... just going back to the psycho killer, if you have sex, you're going to die in the movie. I know I'm kind of stretching it a little bit, but they could represent sexually transmitted diseases or just the dangers of sex.
So there's fear of disease.
Yeah, in a way, yeah. Also technology, just in the modern age, for example, Scream movies, you have the killer, his name is Ghostface, harasses people with frightening phone calls first. And we all remember the campfire story where it's like, you haven't checked the children. And it turns out the call is coming from inside the house.
Mm-hmm. Is that fear of technology?
That's what I was going to bring up. Is that like fear of the technology, or is the person just kind of using technology as a tool in their harassment?
I guess it's more they're using the tool, but as technology evolves, there have been more examples thereof used in the typical serial killer movie. For example, when instant messaging through the internet became a thing, that was adapted in some movies.
Yeah, it's not a fear of the technology itself, but it definitely uses the anonymous nature of it to instill more fear. It kind of gets into the idea of the unknown.
I guess it's more of the unknown, but, you know, we all hear the cautionary tales like, oh, well, you shouldn't give your information out online because you never know who's reading it.
Mm.
Might be some guy in a hockey mask.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh.
But, I mean, that's good advice, especially if you're looking at it from a gaming perspective, in that if these threatening messages or just any kind of threatening information is coming from, who it's coming from.
It builds suspense.
Yeah, exactly.
I think there's one of two ways you can do it. You can either do it really campy, or you can play it straight. If you play it straight, maybe you can... Because we all know the tropes of your typical slasher movie, like, they never go out the front door, they're going to do something stupid that summons the serial killer or whatever. If you look at movies like Behind the Mask or The Cabin in the Woods, those movies explain the how and the why of all these tropes, and that's that an unseen force is manipulating everything. If you want to extend the role-playing to perhaps something a bit more meta or just to create an ongoing nemesis, you could have your players start to find out, oh, well, we're being manipulated to follow this said pattern. And once they find that out, they can break that pattern. And now the villain is like, well, now what do we do? And they start pulling out all the stops. If you want to do it campy, I guess you could draw the iconic victims from a hat. Like, the iconic victims are usually like the nerd, the jock, the slut, the virgin, the token black guy, and then just play it for laughs.
Like, I know we talked about this on the forum, but the manipulated by an unseen force, kind of like Cabin in the Woods or other movies like that, I think that is kind of a fine mm-hmm. line to play before your players get frustrated. Because, in my opinion, one of the kind of necessary tropes to have a horror game is that the protagonists mm-hmm. are much more powerless than they are in other types of movies. In my opinion, you kind of have to play that up to make horror work. But if you, like, stonewall the players at every turn, or if you have some omniscient force that's watching them and can kind of counteract their every move, I could see the players getting really frustrated with that because it'll feel like they're making no progress.
Yeah.
I do see that there could be a risk of railroading the characters if you're not careful.
Well, if you're going to follow kind of the archetypical horror plot stream, then you do have the confrontation at the end where the characters figure out what's going on, what the villain is, maybe even what his weaknesses are, and how they either get away from him or take him on and kill him. But, you know, what you're saying before, Wayne, is I think, really to the point. We've mentioned it a couple times, including in the Stephen King episode, about the difference between action and horror being how much control the players have over their lives and the plot. And it's something that you should come to an agreement with your players on before starting up a horror game, is to realize that at least at the beginning, they're going to be at the mercy of whatever the dark, horrific forces are in the game. I mean, that's what makes it scary.
I think if you basically have your PCs realize this is the enemy, this is the magnitude of their threat, this is what they're capable of, and then have them cleverly escape, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, then it can set up like a nemesis, because now the Cabal, for example, will know that, okay, these guys know who we are. They know too much. And that can build a bit more suspense, I think, because now the player characters are always going to look over their shoulder. They're not going to know who's in the Cabal's pocket, who is the supernatural being, what have you, because it totally changes their perspective on reality if they find out, for example, that werewolves are a thing.
Sorry, are we still talking about serial killers?
No.
where's the
Cabal
game?
Kind of stray off of serial killers.
I get what you're saying. It's like you try to keep the players helpless for a certain point in time. But is that what really needs to happen in a horror game? Is that the players are helpless until the end and therefore they are now capable? Because wouldn't that just kind of fall into like almost any story then?
Well,
it's like you can't defeat the dragon until you get this.
Not necessarily, because we were talking before about the different fears that we had, and we decided to take death, fear of death, off of the list, because so many of the others lead into it. Fear of disease, because disease might kill you. Fear of nature, because nature is dangerous, etc. But that kind of leads into it. I mean, death is one of the biggest fears that humans can feel. So if death is imminent, if death is possible, that's what makes a lot of these situations scary. So it's something where the bad forces, be it a person, a serial killer, or some kind of magical force, if it's not going to present a mortal danger to the characters, why would they be that scared of it? That's kind of the point I was going on.
No, with the serial killer, it's not like a mystery. Because it's pretty rare that they find out how to necessarily kill it.
Right.
They generally kind of come up with a plan. Like, they don't discover, like, the mystery of, like, oh, it's like a werewolf. All right, we should use silver on this guy. They're pretty much as indestructible. If we're looking at the Halloween or the Friday the 13th, or maybe because they just want to have endless sequels.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They're both as indestructible at the end as they are in the beginning. And the players don't really find any magic way or something to kill it. So what can we give a game master to capture that? A lot of it is just they start to fight back. Like, they don't necessarily even try to fight the serial killer for most of a serial killer movie. They just get...
Right.
They don't know what's going on.
I don't know. This might be a hard genre for a game master to do because, one, yeah, the serial killer does kind of have to be unstoppable and unkillable and a killing machine and just kind of mow through the characters. And also, let's face it, players in role-playing games, unless you explicitly say this is a horror game and they build Call of Cthulhu characters, most players kind of think they're indestructible. And, you know, it's that, yeah, we can go take on the dragon and... If they do that in a serial killer kind of subgenre horror game, that's going to be a TPK. You know, there's not going to be anybody left. So maybe what to do is to do it more of a puzzle. They know they can't beat the serial killer. They just have to escape. And direct confrontation is not really going to be an option, or at most will just buy the other player some time.
Absolutely. And a good way to play with it, too, is to mix in a moral choice in the end, you know, or maybe you stop the monster from chasing you, but it's because you directed onto another target. Kind of like in the end of The Ring, where they got the...
Whoa, spoiler!
No, I shouldn't say that. Kind of like the end of The Ring, which has a great moral choice in it, which you should watch, because it's...
Well, that'll be a really tough to guess.
It's cuttable.
Oh, and I ruined your cabin in the woods?
You did, Josh. You explained the entire premise.
I feel like I've seen that movie now.
No, I agree. I guess what I was objecting to is, like, if there's... It just kind of... The form that the confrontation takes at the end. And I think a lot of times in a serial killer movie, you don't really ever stop the serial killer.
Right.
You delay it, or delay him or her, and then you get away.
Right.
And I agree. Even if you do stop it, then, you know, you should look out the window and the body's gone or something like that.
Yeah. Or just not even stop it. Get out.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next genre, or subgenre.
So we get to the next four.
Splatter, which I guess leads, you know, is very similar to the serial killer. Now,
Someone likes to split hairs more than I do. Watch out!
Well, I guess it is, but, you know, splatter can be more than just a serial killer. The way I would
define...
Which
is why it's a separate subgenre.
Of course. But I guess serial killer can still be more horrific and just suspenseful, but splatter I really can see more as just a action horror, where it's all, you know, blood and guts and splatter.
Well, I don't know. I mean, the first movie that came to mind when I heard this was Saw. And I'm not talking about the endless repeats of it, but the original movie, which was quite cerebral. I didn't think it was much of an action movie at all. But I think I know where you're going, that kind of the more shock horror, where it's more about splash some blood on the screen and hope that freaks out teenagers.
Wouldn't that be more like Hostel?
Yeah. Hostel's a great movie. I love that one, too. But it is more of a shock horror than it is. It's not trying to frighten you with suspense. It's trying to frighten you by jumping up and saying boo.
Really? I thought I was trying to get you to vomit on the floor at the enhanced anatomy lessons.
When I think of splatter, I think of something more visceral, like, for example, the Evil Dead films or the Toxic Avenger films, where it's, there is a story, of course, but it's much more visual, much more visceral. There's a lot of disembowelings, chainsaws, gory deaths.
Interesting. See, I put those almost into, like, a parody of the horror genre. My favorite of that is Slither with Nathan Fillion.
Fantastic. That was a good movie.
Yeah, I love that one. But, I think that's kind of the way you're going on it, Josh, eh?
I guess, yeah, you could define those more as horror comedies that are heavy on the action as well.
Yeah.
But just when I think of splatter, just those are the two first examples that came to mind.
Okay.
And that, you know, they are very visceral movies, very gory movies.
I was thinking of a recent Australian film called The Loved Ones, which I think came out in like 2009, and that is definitely a splatter. And it was hard to watch, but at the same time, it was pretty, this is going to sound weird, but almost like an artistic achievement to say, like, wow, that looks absolutely real, and I know it's not, but the special effects in this movie are incredible.
Cool. Yeah, those Australian horror movies are pretty good. Head on a stick.
Yeah.
But, you know, that actually brings up a good point with reference to gaming is, you know, gore, be it an excessive amount like a splatter movie or just kind of your standard horror movie amount, is pretty hard to bring into a game. I mean, it's hard for a description that you read out or say, speak out to the players to match, you know, the buckets of blood that can be done on screen. Can you do it as well? Or should you try? What do you guys think?
I think for one thing, you need players that would be into that.
Me more.
Sorry. Or not into it as much. I guess you can be descriptive, but I think the caution is, you know, you can't be bogged down in all the, pardon the expression, gory details.
I
was waiting for
that. That slows down the game.
I think you get into some of the fears that you want to do. Like, I mean, it's fear of disease.
Hmm.
Like, I know I, you know, watch something like Saw, and, you know, like when they're sticking their hands in all those needles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And syringes, and you're like, it's whatever disease that they might have, and it's that long-lasting effect.
Yeah.
Like, even when you get out of there, it's still gonna
be in you, yeah.
Yeah. Fear of madness, like, you can go crazy.
Oh, there's so much blood.
Or even you could be afraid of just how fiendish that intellect would be. I mean, the thing about Saw is, like, they keep trying to one-up themselves.
Mm.
Yeah, so like kind of just how mad is this opponent going to be? Like, what are they going to stoop to?
Mm-hmm.
I think there's also a bit of a surrealness to the gore as well. Again, going back to the Toxic Avenger films, which I watched recently just because, proving the point that I'm really into horror films.
Oh, the Toxic Avenger?
Well.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. And
Three Tears for Trauma.
And there are just the way he goes about killing the bad guys is just so bizarre, but it's also very, very bloody. For example, this is not a spoiler, it's a part of the movie.
That's not the end?
That's not the end. The first people that he encounters, he like rips arms off, he smashes heads open, and he ends off with stuffing their mouths with mops. Just as another example, his transformation scene from this nerdy little janitor into, and they use this term a lot in the movie, a hideously deformed creature of superhuman size and strength. And if you've ever seen a trauma film, you know that they love to drag stuff like that out.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like, his skin is boiling and bulging. It's very surreal looking to watch this. So if you are a bystander watching somebody turn into this monster or such a monster doing all these horrific things, it has that surrealness factor, and just if that were real life, you could go mad.
I'm going to disagree. And here's why. Because one thing about the Toxic Avenger, because he is strong and, I mean, he is disfigured, but then he kind of, like, survives? I think in a splatter film, what makes it scarier is that you watch the person become a bubbling mess, and that's it, you know? He just became a bubbling mess, you know? And when are you going to become a bubbling mess? It's not the transformation into the Toxic Avenger that's scary. It's that toxic stuff, which could get into fear of disease, fear of, not really fear of nature, I guess. sphere of technology if you do, like, nuclear stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
So you're thinking more kind of like the first movie that came to mind is The Thing, then.
The Thing, I think, is more...
I was just trying to think of a movie where, you know, you kind of didn't survive the transformation, and that's kind of the first one that popped into my head.
Well, I think it falls under a different subgenre, the one that we're going to do next. The Thing, but yeah, I think.
But no, I get the point because it's like all the different
of that, yeah.
Yeah, all the different body parts of people that turn into the Thing are like a separate entity. So there's definitely the madness there. As you're like, what the hell is going on?
Mm-hmm.
You go too far into madness, and then you hit fear of the other because someone who is insane. Well, they still kind of are arguably human, and then once they go over that edge, it's like no. No human person could do this, and even if they didn't get deformed into like a horrible bubbling mass, they are no longer human.
But no, if they're like doing that to people, if they get, you know, what is it, the human centipede?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like somebody that would do that to other people, and it's just like, yeah, why would you do that? And it gets into what we're talking about with serial killers, and it's this like societal trust that somebody's not going to like do that to you. But then if somebody does do that, like somebody just randomly cuts off your arm or throws acid in your face, and we hear about that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's horrific. Like, why would you do that to somebody?
Yeah.
And maybe it's the randomness. I mean, I guess with the serial killer, it's the randomness, and it's an unstoppable antagonist. Or, you know, some sort of motive as well. But in Splatter, you could do the randomness and just do horrific things, and there's no rhyme or reason to it, and it's just disgusting. And as a game master, you could really get into describing those scenes. I know Vampire Masquerade kind of played with it towards the end with the Simices, and they have like cathedrals of flesh.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, I can't wrap my head around that. That's so disgusting.
Maybe this doesn't apply to other people, but I think the splatter would be maybe the hardest to do, maybe because it makes me arguably the most uncomfortable, and people tend to disengage, especially from a game, when they feel uncomfortable. And I could see trying to run a splatter horror game and everybody kind of taking it comedically just because it's so over the top, that's kind of like that defense mechanism kicks in.
No, I get what you're saying. That kind of goes back to what I was saying about, you know, you got to be careful about your players, because if they are not comfortable with that, then it's not going to be fun for anybody.
Yeah, I think I saw a good quote about describing stuff. It said, description should be enough only so that the reader can get a picture, but not so much that there's nothing left for the imagination. And the example was from Edgar Allan Poe's The Telltale Heart, which was, first of all, I cut off the head, and then the arms, and then the legs. There was no spot to wash out, though. I was too wary for that. The tub had caught it all. That was pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a very good point. I guess you kind of have to be vague, but just vague enough.
Mm-hmm. Give them something to imagine.
Yes, exactly.
Well, they could find a body part. You know, sometimes you find a whole body. Why not they just find a part?
Hmm.
And then they're wondering, like, why did they kill him and then dismantle him, you know, or dismember the person?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or maybe the person's still alive and you've just left this NPC in such a disfigured, disturbing state that it's almost like a mercy to kill them.
Mm.
And then it gives your players a dilemma, and, you know, I mean, that could be pretty, pretty horrific.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
Mm. Yeah. All right, on that happy note.
This
creatures!
This is probably the most horrific of the horror episodes we've done, hasn't it?
Okay, next up is Creatures from Beyond.
So this would be, like, alien creatures, Call of Cthulhu-type creatures?
No, it's from beyond.
Or just beyond the norm.
Oh, thanks.
So, like a dangerous neighbor.
No, but it also could be like supernatural, like ghosts or from beyond. You could argue that a vampire or even aliens are beyond, from beyond the mortal realm.
I love how you poo-poo Josh's aliens and then end with, but it could be aliens too.
The first thing that jumped to mind with this was ghosts for me. And actually specifically like from Asian horror movies like Ju-on or The Ring. Ju-on, the English title is The Grudge. And those are some of my favorite horror movies.
Oh, I love The Grudge.
The ghost that'll stab you as opposed to just scare you to death.
Well, The Grudge is all about scaring you to death, but it's done really, really well.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen the original Japanese version, but yeah, I find the American version very, very scary.
Oh, scream it. I swear, like, at the time, there's this scene, and it's right at the beginning, so it's not a spoiler, where a girl goes up to an attic, kind of she's looking around the attic, and she turns, and all of a sudden, there's a ghost.
It's right behind her.
Yeah, and it's just, it's so well done. And at the time, my room had, like, the exact same kind of attic door, because, of course, it's a Japanese house, just like in the And I swear, for the first two nights after watching that movie, I just stared at that door all night long.
So good. Depending on the creature, I guess they could play with a variety of different things. Like, for example, a zombie could be fear of disease. A robot could be fear of technology.
Mm-hmm.
A werewolf nature.
When we talk about fear of creatures from beyond, I, of course, immediately thought of like stuff from H.P. Lovecraft and Cthulhu mythos. And like most of the protagonists in H.P. Lovecraft stuff, they go insane. And I think that's a good way to bring in fear of madness in. It's a creature from beyond. It shouldn't work in this plane of existence. It no one understands how it works. Seeing it either drives you insane.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, yeah, seeing it causes madness in the person who sees it.
No, actually, that's the first thing that came to my mind as well. But if you look at fear of the other, fairy creatures, which originally were very horrific, could also represent fear of the other.
Oh, good.
And they are creatures from beyond, from, well, the bad places that we're not supposed to go, or the fairy realm, what have you. But no, madness definitely, especially with Call of Cthulhu, H.P. Lovecraft type creatures.
Non-Euclidean geometry. Ah!
All right. Whoa, in this universe, 2 and 2 don't equal 4. Ah!
Yeah. Well, I mean, it can be so expansive. It can cover so many things.
As long as that place is beyond.
I think in some respects it's whether or not the beyond takes precedence over the actual entity.
Right.
Because you could say, like, in a lot of the H.P. Lovecraft, it's really, like, just some of the places they come from.
That's definitely true.
It can be the same for the ghosts as well, or if you're talking about demons, it always seems to be, like, sending them back.
Mm.
Whereas in some cases, I mean,
it's outside of the norm.
Like a vampire, yeah, it's just, like, you know, beyond death, I guess you're kind of sending them back by sending them to death, but it doesn't really matter. Like, you don't really care so much about the afterlife in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's something to consider. And I think something like Hellraiser, they do a good job of like trying to paint the other realm, and even like glimpses where you don't necessarily, or even Event Horizon, as you know, Wayne mentioned before.
Yeah.
It's just beyond, fear of the beyond and beyond the Event Horizon or whatever. And it's just glimpses into that world can cause problems. So there's a fear of madness, you know.
I think, as you said, though, Lyle, if the story focuses on the place, the beyond, rather than the creatures from it, then I think it kind of takes on a different tone, where the H.P. Lovecraft stories I was thinking of, where they take place, you know, here on Earth, but something came through or came down from, you know, the stars, or I guess Event Horizon is kind of another one where, you know, it's arguably in the real world, just on a ship, and, you know, kind of something has come through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you focus on the place, then it kind of becomes a different story.
I guess the whole beyond aspect doesn't necessarily have to be something as intangible as the afterlife or hell or some dark dimension, and this probably segues into our next topic. Just if you're running something historical, beyond could be across the ocean or over that hill. Because we don't know what's over there, and that's what scares us.
And beyond the border of the map, yeah.
Yeah.
There be dragons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and dungeons.
Which I guess segues us into our next topic, the unknown. We fear what we don't understand, or what's outside of our concept of normalcy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's pretty subtle.
Yeah.
It's definitely the subtlest of the genres.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
It can be as expansive as, you know, just going back to the serial killer, it can be like, well, why is he doing this? Or it can be as simple as, this house is a little different. There's something intangible, there's something that you don't know, like a nagging little feeling that something isn't right.
Mm-hmm.
Shows like, you could argue whether or not this is a horror movie, but like The Wicker Man, they go to the village, or 10,000 Maniacs? Yeah, I don't know if that's so popular anymore, but they go into a town and things are just not right at first.
For example, they're all waving Confederate flags and welcoming people from northern United States.
Could be that, yeah. Or you could just be in Georgia.
Isn't that still fear of the unknown?
Yeah.
But that is a very good point, Leon. I think that's what is scary. It's just that one thing that kind of is in your face. Maybe not explicitly, but it's just that one thing that sends that message to your brain, like, wrong.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, Deliverance, again, it's not really a horror movie, a traditional horror movie, but there it's just like, yeah, things are not straight. Actually, there's a movie, it's similar to Deliverance, which, and I did enjoy this, and it's called Southern Comfort. And I think that's worth watching.
Southern Comfort. I'm going to make you squeal like a pig. Then we're going to snuggle.
Okay, that's not Southern Comfort. That's Deliverance.
No, Southern Comfort is a snuggle after.
Okay, look, can we stop quoting Deliverance when I'm talking about Southern Comfort? Okay, I think people really understand you guys haven't seen Southern Comfort. It's directed by Walter Hill.
First time we talked about Fear of the Unknown, and just looking at the list of fears we have, I was actually thinking of Andromeda Strain for disease. Arguably, that's not a horror.
No, that's novel, an excellent example.
But it's a disease. Nobody knows where it came from, what it can do. Nobody knows anything about it, and that's the fear.
Contagion is another good example, because they don't know what causes it. I think it may be Outbreak. They actually know what causes the disease.
They just don't know how to cure it, though.
Okay, so I guess that's the unknown. All right. Whereas in the Contagion, they don't really know how it's transmitted.
Mm. Mm. So one movie that you've recommended quite a few times, Lyle, Pontypool's?
Yeah, again, it's one of the things that just stuff starts happening, and they don't know what's causing it, and they don't. And if you don't know what's causing it, you don't know how to stop it, you know? Be an unstoppable serial killer, you just kind of accept that, well, it's not a case of us figuring out how to stop this person, it's a figuring out how to avoid this thing.
Yeah, that's often the start of a lot of horror movies, where something is going on, especially in the zombie genre, where nobody knows what's happening, nobody knows what's going on, everybody starts to be in a state of panic. And it also can touch on the fear of the other, because if you don't know what's going on, everyone around can seem suspicious or frightening.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking of that movie, Blindness. That's fear of the unknown, because you can't see anymore and everything is gone.
Nice. With all the good suggestions.
Yeah. And on top of that, nobody knows how it started, why it's happening, anything about the epidemic. So works on a bunch of levels for unknown.
Yeah, using a movie like Blindness is a nice experiment for your players. It's not something that you would want to have a long, long game, but playing without a sense, yeah. I think it's no spoiler to say they go blind.
And here I thought they just couldn't smell anymore.
Nasal blindness.
Great time to go to a gaming convention.
That'd be a movie's muteness.
Nasal blindness. Who farted? Who indeed?
I don't get it.
Sorry. What are you ear blind now too?
No, it's like
ear blind. I think the word is deaf.
Who indeed? I don't get that.
Funny in my head, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm not the only one.
Fart.
Yeah, but how did they? Oh, because they heard it?
I guess.
It's true. He who smelt it did indeed smell it.
But if you can't smell, then did anyone?
If a tree falls in the forest and no one hears it, does it make a sound?
Someone farts in the woods when no one's around.
Oh, jeez. And here we devolve into comedy because we're getting a bit too horrific.
Yeah, no, definitely this is pretty, pretty rich. There's a lot you can do with it. But like I was saying, a nice experiment is having the players play without a sense, and even just functioning that way becomes the adventure.
I really love that suggestion, Lyle. Because I was saying before with like the splatter movies, how it's difficult to, through vocal description, to bring in how much detail and how much actual horror you can show if you actually have an image. Because, you know, humans are more visual creatures. But in a game like a role-playing game where you're not relying on all the senses, you're basically just imagining everything, it would be much easier to play with having lost the ability to see or hear or whatnot. That's really, really cool. I like it a lot.
That's a good idea.
I also just like the straight up, you go into a town and things just ain't right.
And you gotta stay in that accent too.
Ain't right.
Around here smells funny.
For some reason, it's gotta be set in the south. What would you even notice? So
ain't right in Greyhawk.
Yeah, everyone's speaking like that now.
I ain't seen a cleric around here like you.
The circle of eight anymore. Well, that was
accidental, but well done, sir.
Yeah, it's kind of like Pontypool. We just kept repeating it. And the second last one we have is Mass Infection. And obviously, fear of disease is here, and people can easily identify the most common one, and that is, we've already touched on some with Contagion and that, where but also like focusing more on how it caused. But zombies, everybody kind of figures out very quickly that, hey, don't get bitten by these guys.
Yeah. Well, even in that sense, like some of the movies, it's, the bite kills you, but if you die in any concept, you will come back as a zombie. So, which I think is scarier, actually, than just, you know, don't get bit.
I agree. I think, was it one of Romero's ones where it was, theory was that hell is just overfull?
Yeah, it's done.
It was, yeah.
Done
and there's
the
no
dead.
More room in hell.
And that's so cool. It's so metaphysical, and I love it. I think it's a really good one, because it kind of touches on, is this really what's happening? But nobody knows, so they're kind of making up stories about it, or maybe it's the real thing. Who knows? But I loved it.
That's something like the fear of disease. Fear of technology?
You know, they say scientists are using social networks to track the spread of disease, eh?
Hmm.
And how infectious disease spreads, especially STDs.
I was going to say STDs, because how many people tweet, I think my crotch itches.
Nobody I know of. I don't know about your Facebook wall.
My Facebook wall is all you guys. So. Now, but I don't know. I think fear technology goes with mass infection just because of how there are definitely parallels between how rapidly technology spreads. It is almost kind of like an infection. So
it's also like technology has brought the world closer together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really great, except it's very difficult to isolate yourself.
I was just thinking of specifically an episode of Doctor Who where everybody has these things in their ears and they link them to the internet, and at one point in the day everybody just stops and all this information is downloaded into their head.
Hmm.
And the Doctor and Rose Tyler are watching this, and it's kind of frightening to watch. Just imagine your morning commute and all of a sudden everyone around you just stops. And they monitor what's being downloaded, and then, like, the last thing is the Daily Joke, and everybody just starts laughing, which is silly, but it's also kind of scary when you think about it.
I saw something like that in real life once. When they were sentencing the guy who did the sarin gas attack in Tokyo, I was in Shibuya when it came on the giant Vivitron there, and it's the busiest train station in the world, but everything just stopped. Like, literally, cars stopped on the road, and people kind of stood up out of their doors, and everybody just stopped and watched the Vivitron. It's one of the most surreal things I've ever seen. Hmm. Yeah, it's freaky.
Fear of nature is, well, does disease kind of tie into nature?
I think we're kind of getting into the same thing we had with technology and serial killers. It's not so much the transmission method of whatever the infection may be, but more the infection itself. So even with the techno-zombies, they're still zombies, so it's more the spread and infection that's the frightening bit.
No, I think maybe, you ever see Day of the Animals?
I haven't, no.
And all the animals go crazy?
I have.
Or The Happening?
Oh, The Happening was good.
Yeah.
I didn't like the twist at the end. I'm not going to say what it is.
All right, just checking. I was waiting to cut you off.
I didn't care for it. But no, up to that point, it was very scary, where it's like all of a sudden people just start killing themselves off.
Yeah, it was mostly Fear of the Unknown, that particular movie, but there are things like when nature rises up against you. I know you get in some respects, if you talk about the natural disasters, you're talking about like a disaster film, but Day of the Animals is actually a pretty good example of just how scary it could be if the animals rose up against us.
Since we're talking about like mass infection, we didn't really talk about nature as the target. We did a little bit with Happening, but most of the infected movies are about, you know, people as a source of infection. But what if it is nature is the target, and that's kind of what's destroyed or mutated? I don't know. It kind of bleeds into other ones, like arguably it could become like an apocalypse thing if everything dies, or it could just be kind of like a creature from beyond if they sort of mutate. But there is something to play with there, as with nature being the target of the infection rather than people.
Mm-hmm. I guess if there's like a worldwide famine, just for example, like all the crops die. And society just collapses because we're all fighting each other for food.
Mm-hmm. And like I said,
that could be pretty scary.
Yeah, that kind of, I don't know, that kind of falls into agro-apocalypse, you know, that's the cause of the apocalypse.
Just going with Fear of Madness, there's a comic book series, it's called Crossed. It's kind of like a retelling of the zombie story, where there's a plague and it turns people into kill crazy pedophile rapist psychopaths. Picture every horrible thing you may have read about in the newspaper, and these people do it. And it's a plague. It spread through bodily fluids like your typical zombie. But rather than being like, ugh, brains, they can think, and they can make long-term plans, basically whatever will give them the biggest body count.
Hmm.
And where zombies do it because, you know, they want to eat you. These guys want to do it just, you know, they want to rape you. They want to kill you. It's more horrific.
You know what that reminds me of is Firefly, the Reavers.
I was thinking the same thing, well, yeah.
Yeah, and I think they actually did a pretty good job with how they used the Reavers in Firefly. Very, very horrific, but with the element of mystery, because they never really explain them.
Mm. Yeah, and that's a good way to present horror in any kind of game, is to have it through exposition of other people. Tell these stories of how horrible whatever it is. Mm. Let the players build up the fears themselves.
No, that's a good point. Like, in any of those stories is, like, people coming back and telling you what they've seen or what they've heard.
Or just passing on gossip and rumors, you know?
Yeah.
Most of the time, that's much more horrific than actually seeing it. Seeing the thing is kind of like a letdown in some cases.
There's a quote from some famous movie director, and I apologize that I don't remember who it was, but he said...
I wanted to do it that way. That's what she said. Joke.
I'm missing what? Oh, I got you now.
Actually seeing
yeah,
it.
I got you. Yeah.
Carry on.
But there's a quote I remember from. a horror director, and I apologize that I don't remember who it was, but he said, "You know, never reveal the monster in its entirety."
That's what she said.
Only hint at it. But
that's a good one. Sorry.
I ruined the end of that, didn't I?
There I was going all deep, and Wayne had to ruin it.
Sorry.
That's what she said.
I guess that's also Fear of the Other, though.
He would kill Lyle.
Yeah.
I think one thing about the Mass Effect, just getting way back to what we're
actually talking about.
I think it's also the sheer numbers, and I think giving the players a sense of that hopelessness. And you ever see that, you know, you watch or you see some of those iconic pictures of, like, the Warhammer 40K one,
right,
with the Crimson Fists, and they're just, like, they're making that last stand. Or you see that hero, and they're, like, taking on the bad guys, but, you know...
They're surrounded.
They're surrounded, and you can just see more and more and more, and you know it's not going to end well. And just kind of that hopelessness.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking the remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, Invasion, as a good mashup of Mass Infestation with The Other, because it is transmittable. It does spread, and the people are human, but not. You know, they don't turn into zombies, they just turn into something else that is not human.
Tommyknockers is like that, too.
Salem's Lot?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't even matter. Yeah, like you said, Wayne, it doesn't really matter what they're turning into.
Hmm.
Although vampire is not a great thing.
Right.
But it's just the fact that, you've changed, too, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it could even be brainwashing, not to make it less horrific, but like almost like a political horror.
Yeah, the Manchurian Candidate is kind of in those lines.
Yeah, I'll start voting Republican or something.
Oh,
like
yeah.
That.
If done right, I think the brainwashing could be even, you know, more horrific, because it's not a supernatural thing that kind of you can look down upon. Well, I guess you can look down upon brainwashing, so that doesn't work. But it's more like, no, this was created by people and is done to people, which, if done correctly, can make it much more horrific than the space virus from Planet X, you know?
True.
That's true. It's more like, you know, this is still a person rather than a pod or a vampire or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, actually, because I was saying before during the serial thing about how the unknown can be scary, but, you know, if you do know about it, then that can make it just evil. You know, what kind of moral depths have the people who are doing this sunk to?
Yeah.
Okay, and that wraps up our episode on movie genres, horror.
And our 2012 month of horror as well.
There you go. It's a double wrap-up.
And it is. So hopefully this will give you some good ideas of the different kind of genres you can play with and different elements that you can include in your games and things like that. All right, well, thank you for joining us again on Idle Red Hands. Check us out online at www.idleredhands.com, idleredhands.com. You can listen to the episode right there on the website, or stream it through iTunes or Stitcher, or download it through DriveThruRPG. You can also post comments right there on the webpage, or find us on Facebook, send us an email, or sign up and follow our Twitter so you can see if Wayne talks about his crotch itching or not. So see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Right, happy Halloween.
Oh, yeah, we forgot to say that in all of our episodes.
Shoot.
Drive-through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-through RPG, the one true source for RPGs.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.